I see a few new faces, so welcome. And maybe you see a few new faces because my children are here, which I'm very grateful for and excited about, encouraging me by being here to listen to my talk. And I also figure, even if nothing that I present makes sense to anyone, you will all be polite, but once I get home, I'll get the true feedback from my children who will say, "Mom, what were you talking about?" So, I'm going to do something a little unusual for Wednesday night gathering like this, but I would like to dedicate this talk to our friend Jean Marie. And so in closing, I'll do a more formal dedication, and then we can all dedicate our effort in being here to her well-being and recovery. I would like to begin with a poem. And this is a poem by David White, and it's called What to Remember When Waking. It relates quite a bit to what I'll be talking about. And as you listen, think about waking from a night's sleep, waking from a dream, waking from samadhi, and all the transitions that we do. So this is What to Remember When Waking. In that first hardly noticed moment in which you wake, coming back to this life, from the other more secret, movable, and frighteningly honest world where everything began, there is a small opening into the day which closes the moment you begin your plans. What you can plan is too small for you to live. What you can live wholeheartedly will make plans enough for the vitality hidden in your sleep. To be human is to become visible while carrying what is hidden as a gift to others. To remember the other world in this world is to live in your true inheritance. You are not a troubled guest on this earth. You are not an accident amidst other accidents. You are invited from another and greater night than the one from which you have just emerged. I guess I have to leave on my glasses. I'm never quite sure. I have been studying the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, which is a beautiful poem that's very dear and central to this school of Zen. And the whole time I was preparing this talk and looking at this rich, complex poem, and you know, pulling out threads that were important to me, I kept asking myself, "What's emerging here? What is this talk about? What's at the heart of this reflection?" And what I discovered actually is faith. Faith in mind, faith in our good hearts, faith in the Dharma, and faith that our true natures manifest here and now, which is somewhat central to the poem. Faith in time being, faith that each moment is the entire world, faith that I am whole and confirmed, not an accident, faith in unfabricated nature, and I'll be talking more about this through the poem, but we have such, we can be so moved by the vastness that we can experience, and then it's gone. And so often we try to get it back and hold on to it, and just that phrase and just that moment that was so moving. And it doesn't work that way. The Jewel Mare Samadhi is a beautiful poem, and I'm always very moved by poetry. There's a fairly simple message to the poem, really, and yet it's a message that's just wound around and around, and we're given entry to this central message over and over again in the lines of the poem. Maizumi Roshi talks about this message, which is one way that you could say what it's about is the poem's about the non-duality of form and emptiness. But a simpler way that Maizumi Roshi talks about this non-duality is as simply realizing that your true nature and the phenomenal world are meeting right here now as your life. And for me, that way of holding the meeting of form and emptiness was very accessible and kind of brings it right into my life. And so here's a fairly simple message, and yet the poem just invites us over and over again to enter into the meaning of that. I've been reading, Red Pine has a translation of the Tao Te Ching that I've been reading, and he says something lovely about poetry in the introduction to that. He says, poetry has the ability to point us toward the truth and then stands aside, while prose stands in the doorway relating all the wonders on the other side, but rarely lets us pass. And in just this way, I think the Jewel Mare Samadhi keeps inviting us to taste this truth of the Tathagata's words. So in thinking that I was that I would be talking about the Jewel Mare Samadhi, I was fairly immobilized for a number of weeks, really, because it took me a while to realize that that wasn't something that I could do, that I couldn't sit up here on a Wednesday night and teach about the Jewel Mare Samadhi, for two reasons. The depth of the Jewel Mare Samadhi, and I'm not saying this to denigrate myself, but really what comes to mind is the shallowness of my understanding, or just the, you know, kind of scratching the surface of things of my understanding. But I realized that while I can't give a talk about the Jewel Mare Samadhi, I can do this. And I'm going to quote you, Edie, from the other night, because I was so moved by what you said, which is that even though I can't give a talk about this poem, I can touch it and be touched by it, and then express myself to you. So not interpreting a poem, but expressing what's touched me about that poem. So even though I can't give a talk about the Jewel Mare Samadhi, I will talk about it. And I'm just going to talk about certain phrases that really resonate with this central theme, and perhaps we can let this poem point us in the direction of understanding. And something that's actually from this poem that relates to what I'm saying is, the meaning is not in the words, yet it responds to the inquiring impulse. There's another translation that I think is even more points even more directly, which is, meaning cannot rest in words. It adapts itself to that which arises. This poem, as most of you know, is attributed to Dongshan, cave mountain good servant, and he is the 38th ancestor in the Soto lineage, and there are so many great stories about him, beginning with the one that relates, he was, you know, very young monk, maybe 10, I don't know, I'm making that up, but of the his nature, of the simple nature and age that, you know, he brought forth the question, there's this teaching and we keep chanting, no ears, no eyes, no nose, no tongue, but I have ears, here they are, and I have a tongue, and this is his poem. And what I'd like to do, with your willingness to dive under the front edge of your cushions and get your chant books, is chant this first so that you can hear the whole of the poem and chant it with me. The Song of the Jomir Samadhi. Evie, you want to give me a little ka-chunk to get us started? Thank you. Song of the Jomir Samadhi. Teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. So keep it well, filling a silver bowl with snow, hiding a heron in the moonlight, taken as similar, they're not the same. When you mix them, you know where they are. The meaning is not in the words, yet it responds to the inquiring impulse. Move and you are trapped, miss and you fall into doubt and vacillation. Turning away and touching are both wrong, for it is like a massive fire. Depicted in literary form is to stain it with defilement. It is bright just at midnight, it doesn't appear at dawn. It acts as a guide for beings, its use removes all pains. It is not without speech, it is like facing a dual mirror. Form and image behold each other, you are not it, in truth it is you. Like a babe in the world, in five aspects complete, it does not grow, nor come, nor rise, nor stand. Baba wawa, is there anything said or not? Ultimately, it does not apprehend anything because its speech is not yet correct. It is like the six lines of the illumination hexagram, relative and ultimate interact. Piled up, they make three. The complete transformation makes five. It is like the taste of the five-flavored herb, like a diamond thunderbolt, suddenly included within the true. Inquiry and response come up together, communing with the source, travel the pathways, embrace the territory. Respecting this is fortunate, do not neglect it. Naturally real, yet inconceivable, it is not within the province of delusion or enlightenment. With causal conditions, time and season, quiescently it shines bright. In its fineness, it fits into spacelessness. In its greatness, it is utterly beyond location. A hair's breadth deviation will fail to accord with the proper attunement. Now there are sudden and gradual in which teachings and approaches arise. Once basic approaches are distinguished, then there are guiding rules. But even though the basis is reached and the approach comprehended, true eternity still flows on. While inwardly moving like a tethered colt, a trapped rat, the ancient sages pitied them and bestowed upon them the teaching. According to their delusions, they called black as white. When erroneous imagination ceased, the acquiescent mind realizes itself. If you want to conform to the ancient way, when about to fulfill the way of Buddhahood, one gazed at a tree for 10 eons, like a battle-scarred tiger, like a horse with shanks gone gray. Because there is the common, there are jewel pedestals, fine clothing. Because there is the startlingly different, there are house cat and cow. Ye, with his archer's skill, could hit us at 100 paces. Meet head on, what has this to do with the power of skill? When the wooden man begins to sing, the stone woman gets up dancing. It's not within reach of feeling or discrimination. Admit of consideration in thought. Ministers serve their lords, children obey their parents. Not obeying is not filial. Is no help. Practice secretly, working within, like a fool, like an idiot. Just to continue in this way is called the host within the host. The teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, so keep it well. I'm going to quote something that Reb said about this phrase that I thought was helpful and lovely. He says that at the beginning of this poem, he transmits the samadhi to you, and now you have it. You have the samadhi now. Then he says, now that you have it, take care of it well. How are you going to take care of this thing? How are you going to take care of such a precious way of being? It's something you receive and give. It's not something you take and hold. And the practice is not any longer something that you are doing. It's something that lifts you up and carries you forward on the path. You receive and you give it away. So please, take care of it the way you take care of any precious thing that's alive. Pay attention to it. Stay close to it. Don't try to control it. Never lose sight of it. And if you do lose sight of it, confess, I lost sight of it, and start paying attention again. So we receive a teaching, or study a text, or hear a Dharma talk, or sit with a koan, or poetry has pointed something out to us, and we have insights. And we want so much to hold them, to hold on to them. And then they are dead things. For me, for many years, the study of the Dharma has been just this, if I take the right notes, or, you know, if I somehow memorize a phrase, I've really over and over again struggled with this, just, you know, wanting to pin something down. And so far, no good. But really, I think this is a really important teaching about our relationship to understanding and what our minds can grasp, and then what we can live and what we can experience. And even though I can't grab onto it, I do so in my experience resonate with it being something that lifts me up and carries me forward on the path as a felt experience. So the reason I think that a central thing in this talk is faith and trust, because I have a growing faith that I can release my hold on understanding and grasping at insights as they come through, and rather let them move through. There's a teaching by Katagiri Roshi about this in Each Moment in the Universe. And what the way he expresses this is, when you touch non-dualistic mind, you have a moment of samadhi, you have a moment of wisdom. And you have wisdom in that moment, and then you bounce back. And when you bounce back, you don't have wisdom. You have faith. You touch the truth, and then you bounce back. You have an insight, and then you're back in the flow of your mind and your feelings. So when we touch it, we don't know it. We're not thinking about it. And then later, we may know this insight, but we know it just as a postcard from where we've been, but we no longer are in that wisdom because we have dualistic mind again. But the fact that we have an echo and we have faith is really very encouraging to me, and it helps me relax. It helps me relax with the teachings. And I would say that this realizing and having faith that my true nature and the phenomenal world are meeting right here and now is my life, as my life is expressed by the Jewelmere Samadhi in this phrase: with causal conditions, time and season, quiescently it shines bright. Within causal conditions, here is Buddha nature, quiescently shining, not separate from this all-inclusive moment, and not separate from just this person, whether I know it or not. And this is where the faith comes in. So in the bright daylight of our activity and swimming and sometimes drowning with our causal conditions, mostly I don't even feel that I have the postcard. But the fact that I can touch back on faith is something that can keep kind of pointing me in. Quiescently, it shines bright. In some of the commentaries and references that I was reading about this line, there's a really beautiful poem by Hong Zhe, is that right?
Hong Zhe.
From Guidepost of Silent Illumination. And this poem is referenced as another expression of this quiescently shining of Buddha nature with causal and conditions. So I wanted to share a little bit of this poem too. Silent and serene, forgetting words, bright clarity appears before you. When you reflect it, you become vast. Where you embody it, you are spiritually uplifted. Spiritually solitary and shining, inner illumination restores wonder. Dew in the moonlight, a river of stars, snow-covered pines, clouds enveloping the peaks. In darkness, it is most bright, while hidden, all the more manifest. When wonder exists in serenity, all achievement is forgotten in illumination. What is this wonder? Alertly seeing through confusion. Is the way of silent illumination and the origin of subtle radiance. Vision penetrating into subtle radiance is weaving gold on a jade loom, upright and inclined to yield to each other. Light and dark are interdependent, not depending on a sense faculty and object. At the right time, they interact. Responding without falling into achievement, speaking without involving listeners, the 10,000 forms majestically glisten and expound the Dharma. All objects certify it, everyone in dialogue. So there's one more related passage from the Jewel Mirror that I'd like to unpack just a little bit. And then I'll stop talking and maybe we can have some conversation. And that passage is this. I'll read it all the way through and then kind of look line by line. But this is a passage that is one that helps me and that I remember and that comes to me in certain moments. Communing with the source, travel the pathways, embrace the territory, and treasure the road. Communing with the source, travel the pathways. My true nature, communing with my true nature, and the phenomenal world, right here is my life. Those two things together to me are communing with the source, travel the pathways. Embrace the territory, really the best expression for me is from what we've been studying in Dogen's Uji, which is each moment is the entire world. This is the breadth and depth of the territory. And treasure the road. To treasure the road is to respond to circumstances with this faith in big mind or Buddha nature, to be rooted in circumstances and yet also rooted in that faith of the unfabricated nature. So going back again to this expression of treasuring the road from Dogen, to treasure the road is to travel in this phenomenal world in Dogen's time being, which is each moment is all being, this is quoting Dogen, each moment is the entire universe. Reflect now whether any being or any world is left out of the present moment. So grounding this in our everyday life, that each moment is the entire world. Imagine what your life would be like if you actually believed that, if we actually lived that and knew that it was so. Even when we weren't thinking of it, if this is the way we lived, intuitively with each moment complete and full. Even if it was a moment of suffering and pain and something was going on that we really wished wasn't. Even then, it would be a full and complete moment in which nothing was missing and everything we needed was present. And all our longing and neediness and pain and frustration was all taken care of, all included in this moment. Communing with the Source. Travel the pathways, embrace the territory, and treasure the road. Just to be alive and just be satisfied with that. And feel its depth, really. So this poetry and this Dogen, you know, I talk about it and I look at it and I think it's just so lofty. And yet, this is our practice, is that we can sit with this and, you know, sitting in Zazen when I'm not arguing with myself and planning the day and fussing and doing all the things that we do when we sit down, we also sit down and in moments we taste this lofty ineffability. And so then I'm thinking about what's for lunch again, and really the faith part is, you know, when I bounce back to my everyday mind, I can have faith and cultivate that. And I'm going to end by going back to Reb's words again. Please take care of it the way you would take care of any precious thing that's alive. Pay attention to it, stay close to it, don't try to control it, never lose sight of it. And if you do lose sight of it, confess, I lost sight of it, and start paying attention again. Thank you. So I'd love to hear your comments to these kind of wandering words. That was my expression of interacting with this poem so far. Does anyone have questions? Chuck?
Well, you clearly stated how deep it is, and that it's kind of a lofty aspiration to bring it all together, and yet you seem to put it in terms that I think we can relate to really well. Increase our understanding. And I really appreciate you bringing in these other teachings that hold it up, that clarify.
Thank you. Patrick.
So what do you do with that faith that's kind of developing with your practice, with your study, with where does it live, and what do you do with it?
When? Which moment? I can answer that. And, you know, so many moments arise, and there's access, you know, and I feel that sometimes there's very easy access to that faith. Sometimes it's a matter of asking, you know, feeling myself really being kind of caught up and turned around and saying, how do I practice with this? And, you know, there's a little faith, and sometimes there are phrases. And sometimes, often, once I sit down, then the experience of sitting down and being quiet reconnects me to that. I notice that so often, which is why this strenuous, for me, twice a day zazen is so wonderful. Because I don't necessarily think, oh, if I just sit down, I might be better off. But, you know, so I can spend a whole evening turning my, you know, getting all turned around, but then when I come and sit down in the morning, there it is. So that's one way. There was something else in what you said that I was going to... Give me just a minute. Because it was so important and it was something I really wanted to say.
Where is it? What do you do with it? That's a
question. Yeah. Oh, I know. Thank you. It's like when you walk, you know, when I can't think of what I went to the other room for and I have to go back to where I started. Patrick knew that, so all he had to do was repeat what he said. There was something that I read during Jean's precept class about precepts that I found very reassuring. And it has to do with going back and forth between our everyday life and decisions and struggles and confusion and this kind of aspiration that I sometimes walk around with, that I should be able to at every moment have clarity and express my Buddha nature, and that will come forth, and therefore I will do the right thing. And it was actually oddly on a book about the four immeasurables, Alan Wallace's book, but he talks about the precepts as this lovely protection, like a little protective fence around your garden of, you know, where you're cultivating your seeds of understanding. And it helps you when you, it helps keep kind of you safe, it helps keep me safe in my decisions and interactions, to have the precepts to turn to also, and have faith in that as a guide. So I thought that was helpful too. Thank you.
That's a great line. Was that from my Zoom event of after wisdom you're left with faith?
That was Katagiri Roshi. Yeah, that was Katagiri.
Do you think there may be some connection between treasuring a road and that faith?
Yeah, definitely. And that's part of the reminder. It's something that we know. And, you know, I really think that this is actually partly, again, talks to Patrick's question. Treasuring the road is, helps me remember, like, to teach myself the Dharma. When I know that I know that I will experience freedom embracing this moment, And everything in me doesn't want to embrace this moment. And I have faith that I will find freedom in embracing this moment. So it's like, sometimes I, you know, that's just like another help, is to teach myself the Dharma. Just listen up. Well, in a gentle way. Yeah. So I think in that way, I don't know if I might have taken that off on another little tangent, but I think it's definitely. Jean?
Toward the dual mirror, there's the practice of working within like a fool, like an idiot. It sounds a little bit like your description.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And it's a little mysterious to me how we then move into the active part of our daily lives. For you, how do you make that transition from Zazen mind into bringing Zazen mind into your work or your family? What's an example?
I think by all the ways we've just been talking, you know, maybe we've been talking more about when I really feel stuck, or when I, you know, where is that faith? I think really, maybe this isn't true, but I don't know. So I'm going to say it anyway. When, you know, many moments with my family, I'm just living my beautiful life, and I'm living my beautiful Buddha nature life, and I'm looking at them, and they're Buddhas sitting everywhere on them. And then it's when that isn't true, when I'm looking at them and they're tracking little muddy sand tracks all over the rug, and I'm looking at little muddy sand tracks instead. That's when the kind of stopping, you know, and remembering how perfect that is comes in. But a lot of times I think, it reminds me of what Katagiri Roshi was, his point was, we're not necessarily noticing that we're absolutely in perfection. We're just having dinner. Yay. I mean, I think there are many moments like that. Does that answer your question at all?
It points. And I think I'm asking for the specifics that are mysterious to me. Is it a body memory? Is it self-talk? Mm-hmm. Is it a line or a chant that arises?
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking for the nuts and bolts. How does it happen that you stop and remember? When do you stop?
It depends. I think all of those things, I mean, you were listing some things that we all do, and we've been talking about things that we all do. And I really think that for most of us, all those things are true. And some of it's about how deep down the rabbit hole I actually go, you know, how turned around I actually get. And then sometimes, you know, it takes a whack. But sometimes it's just a look from someone that reminds me that I'm a little bit off, you know, like, that's odd. You know, looking at me and recognizing in me that I'm not really present, or whatever's going on. That's really all I can tell. all the further I can go for now. Yeah, thank you.
I just wanted to say that when you were explaining how you feel about what happens to you with these moments of wisdom and not so wise, and in talking about the poem, that it really reminds me a lot of, really a lot of my own interior conversations, and the way when I feel I have to write something in my journal about how I got turned around and how I got out of it, it's the same kind of terminology that I use. I don't really use Dharma terminology when I'm writing from my heart. I just talk about how I get spun around and how all of a sudden this occurred to me, you know, how wonderful that was, you know, and then it went away, and then I could remember it, maybe. And maybe remembering that it happened was, it had a feeling about it that would help me through another bad time. I could remember that. Kind of thing. And, anyway, so I think this is the first time I've heard it explained, experiences like this in the same way. It's kind of similar to our discussion group on Sunday nights when we were just talking about stuff that happens, you know, but this is really helpful to me.
Thank you. Any other comments? I have no idea what time it is. I don't have a watch. Time! Then I would like to make our dedication. So, may we dedicate any merit that we have gained by our effort here this evening, talking and listening about our understanding, exploring the nature of faith. May we dedicate this to Jean Marie and her family, and to all those who are suffering in body and in mind. May their hearts be at peace. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way.